Accession number 27071, Reel 3.
Dennis Till, Reel 3. So you were just saying that you were, when you were...
Well, we were beaching in Studland Bay, and I was only just taking over as First Lieutenant, and I wasn't properly organised. I mean, we should have gone in, we were wearing tin hats and such like, and I hadn't given any instructions to that account, and the crew, well, they just didn't bother, you see, and I got an awful rocket for that, because we landed plumb in front of all the top brass, and I didn't get it at the time, but we were just wandering around with our normal caps and, you know, we weren't even in proper uniform and, you know, wearing dungarees and such like. And
so you weren't told that this was going to be a...
Well, I should have known. I should have known. But I didn't do anything about it. And my skipper got a rocket, and, of course, he got... The flotilla officer got a rocket, and I got a rocket. But
what did you think about Churchill at the time? Was he a hero? Or
oh yeah, very much so. Yeah. He? Well, we didn't think a fat lot about anybody, really. You know, I think our own, you know, Cunningham and people like that were in Mountbatten, and but.
What did you know at that time about the Normandy landings? I mean, you obviously knew there was going to be some big landing.
Didn't know anything.
That's why they were...
We didn't know anything. Nothing at all. No.
Right.
No, we just knew what we had, that we had to do, where it would be, or anything like that. And of course, when it got to near D-Day, because this must have been in May when we had that incident I was telling you about. And there were craft everywhere, and at the time my wife, which I hadn't met at that time, but she was boat's crew Wren, and she was at HMS Cricket, which is near Southampton, in Southampton Water, and they had a lot of LCAs and LCPs, that's the small assault craft, and Royal Marines and Matlows. And on the morning of just before D-Day, she had to report for duty because she was on the truck boat going looking after the stores and Liberty men and such like. And she got there, well, must have been the 5th of June, and there wasn't a craft to be seen. Whereas the day before, you could have walked across the river on craft. There were so many there, you know. But
and she hadn't known.
Well, she knew that there would be going, but that particular... They weren't given any warning. They just, from being overcrowded, nothing at all, you know. And they didn't have anything to do either, you know. And no. Anyway, that's just by the way.
So when did you get some idea that this...
Well, we were at...
getting closer.
We were at... Well, we knew it was imminent anyway, obviously, with all the training and everything. And then we loaded up with the Avray. They had to reverse on so that they were facing forward when they got onto the beach, you know.
Forgive me, Avray is what?
Assault Vehicle... Royal Engineers.
Right.
AVRE. Mm-hmm. And they went in at HR. We took them in at HR. And they had all sorts of gadgets on their tanks, such as a great big roll of material they could run out over soft sand. And they had explosive devices on the end of spars that could blow up obstacles. And they had flails on their tanks to set off any sort of mines that had been buried anywhere, and all sorts of gadgets like that. And bridging craters, they had great big things to plonk over to British equator, any craters there might be, which would have been major obstacles on the beach. Mm-hmm. And they went in first because they had to sort of try and clear a gangway, as it were, for the follow-up troops.
So how far ahead of you sailing did the Avray arrive and load up?
Well, it must have been... we went into the hard. They created hards where you could go in and put your ramp down, and then they would all back on. You know, this was at Portsmouth and roundabout there. And
so this was a few days before D-Day, was it?
Well, it must have been, you know, because even 2 days, you know, something like that before that. I'm a bit vague about it.
Yeah,
but I do remember particularly you had to be what they call briefed as to when you were going and where, and the skipper had already been briefed. And he wanted to brief me, and I said, can I have one run ashore to the dance hall at Gimbal's? Yeah, you're all right, you do
before
that.
Before you were briefed, yeah. Because once you were briefed...
You couldn't go ashore, no, yeah. So anyway, I pleaded with him to go ashore, and I had a nice dance with a wren called Scotty, and came back on board, and he was asleep, and I shook him. And I said, you can brief me now. But of course, we were a day later because of the weather, you know. And
so just before we leave Portsmouth, I mean, Portsmouth must have been packed with people. You said you
went to
the dance hall. What was the atmosphere like? There must have been an atmosphere of, you know, knowing something was going to happen soonish.
Well, it's excitement, I think, rather than anything, you know. And it's funny, really, because I never went back to Portsmouth after the assault. I worked from Southampton, and which is where I met my Joan. But no, it was it was exhilarating, really. You know, apprehensive as well, of course, because it was foul weather when we sailed.
So when you woke the captain up, he briefed you, did he?
No, he swore at me. He briefed me in the morning.
And what did the briefing tell you? What did you?
Well,
learn?
It told you when we were to sail, where we were to beach, and of course everyone was more or less locked on board. We were anchored off at that stage. We weren't alongside anywhere. And
What were the Royal Engineers like? They were there with their vehicles, were they? What sort of people were they?
Well, I hadn't known them, but the rest of the crew did know them. And they were, you know, like a party with old friends, you know. And I don't suppose the bulk of the invasion were like that, because they didn't have to exercise with all these funny gadgets they had on their tanks as much as we did, and consequently it was important that we linked up with them and they were familiar with us and vice versa.
Did they explain all these different gadgets they've got to you, or, you know?
No, I don't think so. I mean, some of them, well, it was obvious what they were, you know, and but I think they had explosives on the end of long poles, almost like spears, stuck out the forward end of the tank with... I think they called them telemines or something, and they could sort of drive them into an obstacle and then explode them. And but most of the stuff was to either fill in craters or just to facilitate going over the beaches, you know. And,
so these were actually tanks, were they? That
oh yeah, Churchill tanks. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How many did you take?
I think eight or nine.
And what crew would they each have?
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth, but I wouldn't have thought there were too many crew, because they were more concerned with them. I mean, they obviously had somebody in charge of each tank, you know, whether it was an officer or an NCO, and they had, well, obviously engineers and electrical people, because this is what their specialists, as it were. It's strange, really, because we use them in our sectors, and the Canadians use them, but the Americans didn't. And which is funny when you think Americans are noted for their gadgets, aren't they? And yet they didn't have them, you know. And of course, our other things we didn't actually deal with what they call DD tanks. That's duplex drive. They have wing tanks that enable them to float with a screw, and then when they get ashore, they deflate their wings and drive off on their wheels, more or less. And am I jumping the gun? I would say we grounded on one of them. On the assault, you know, yeah, and
we'll just go back to the weather was bad, wasn't it?
Oh,
were you
foul.
Expecting it to be cancelled or
no? Well, it was postponed for
postponed
for 24 hours. That's all, yeah.
And then you got word.
And then we said, well, off we went, you know, more or less.
And you were in flotilla 45.
Yeah.
What time did you set sail? Was this in the dark?
Can't remember, really. But we were all more or less in position. And we were the last to leave because we had the beach first. And we then sailed through an avenue, as it were, of every type of craft that you could imagine. We were towing an LCA with a Lieutenant Fortescue in charge of that one, and she was swamped, and we had to cut the tow, and we got the crew on board us. Lieutenant Fortescue was a nephew of the Lord Lieutenant of Devon, the Fortescues. I remember that.
So why was
he was RN, Lieutenant RN. Mm-hmm.
So why was that LCA being towed?
Well, because she wouldn't have had enough fuel to go right across the channel, you know, and we towed them. In fact, we all were towing something, because we would have sort of loosed them just off the beaches, and they could have made their own way ashore, and that would have been another factor. And help with the assault. And
why did she get
swamped?
Swamped, yes.
I mean, oh, well, it was such heavy weather, tremendous, you know. And I don't think she was the only one to be swamped. But we took the crew on board, and then we got off the beach beached.
So we
threaded our way through an avenue of every conceivable craft, you know. And
that must have been so exciting.
It was wonderful. Mm. Yeah.
Had you any idea how big this invasion was going to be? I mean, it's
no, not really. No, you just looked to your own bit, you know. And I mean, there was sure. Where are what I've done with it? That's the pattern of the assault.
Oh, right. So this piece of paper is a copy of D-Day sword sector. Was
yeah.
this something you had at the time?
Yeah. Well, the skipper did.
Right.
And We each had one of those. We had, and I marked where our craft was, 1094.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. Mm.
So he had this, so he was literally following...
Well, that was the order of the assault. And yeah. The ones ahead of us were DD tanks, I think, weren't they? Does it say DD tanks?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Well, they were the very first to beat. They beached before HR. Mm. And then we beached at HR.
Mm. Mm. So as you went towards the coast of France, what did you see? What could you see of the coastline?
Not a lot, I don't think. We were more aware of what was either side of us, you know, and because there were big ships there. And there was a Norwegian... Was it Norwegian or Polish? Destroyer blown up, torpedoed.
And you saw that happen, did you?
I saw it happen, yeah. Mm. And the bow and the stern were stuck up. V for victory, as it were. Mm.
What was the noise like? I mean, was the you getting attacked from the air, or what was going on? What could you hear?
Well, there was a lot of gunfire, obviously, and but you. There was a Norwegian destroyer called the Svenner, which was torpedoed off the mouth of the River Orne, with her bows and stern high in the air, forming a spectacular V for victory. That's
you
what I
that,
recollected, yeah.
So you were in two groups. So as you came towards the coast, was there a lot of stuff on the beach, as it were? What was going on? Do you remember?
No, not really. We sort of hammered in on the beach, dropped our ramp, and shooed all the Royal Engineers off. And then we caged off,
How long would that take, do you think?
Oh, it's difficult to say. 20 minutes, perhaps, something like that, you know. It's once your ramp went down, it was, everybody went, you know, hell for leather. And of course, there was a tank more or less in the bows, and the rest were in pairs right back along the tank deck, and of course they had to manoeuvre and shunt off as best they could. And
because they're quite unwieldy things to drive.
And of course you've got to sort of work one lot and turn a bit, and then work the other to straighten up. And it didn't look a question of putting your foot on the accelerator and shooting off, you know. The only one who could do that was the one in the front. And
did you always get off safely?
They all got off safely, yeah. Mm.
So there wasn't much stuff about on the beach when they got there?
No, only obstacles. And of course, we were glad to pull off and get out of the way. And then we were holed. We were holed in our... for fuel tanks, and the engines packed up, you know, and we were and a passing
as you were coming from the beach.
Well, we were well off the beach by then, and but there was a lot of obviously flak around, and we got hit there, and we got seawater in the fuel, and we just sort of wallowed for a bit, and another craft took us in tow and took us back to New Haven. I started off in Kimball's dance hall, and I finished up there when I got back with the same wren. So D-Day for me began in Kimball's dance hall at Southsea and finished in Kimball's dance hall.
So you got towed back to New Haven.
Yeah.
What did you see on the way back? Was there still stuff coming out?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's an awful lot of traffic, as it were, yeah. And then we went we were taken from New Haven to Portsmouth and we went into dry dock. And for such a insignificant craft as an LCT to be in have priority in the dry docks, there must have been about a dozen of us tucked in the dry dock, you know. Yeah.
So when you got back to Southsea and you went to Kimball's dance hall again on the second night, the atmosphere must have been very different, was it?
Oh yeah, yeah. In fact, we all thought the war was over almost, you know, and but they were all talking about what they were going to do when they left the service, and yeah.
Were you getting news of how the invasion had gone? I mean, did you get any news?
Not really. No, not really. We had a wireless on board, you know, which wasn't supposed to be used as a wireless. It was supposed to be into communication with the flotilla and the squadron, but we used to use it for tuning into the home service as it was then. But I imagine that everyone ashore knew what was happening because they listened to the wireless, and they knew more than we did, actually. All we knew is that we'd offloaded our tanks and cleared off out of the way, and thankfully this passing craft, who wasn't in our flotilla at all, but towed us back.
So quite an empty dance hall that night, I should think.
No, I don't think so. Oh, no, right. No. Well, there was still, well, there was lots of people waiting to go over anyway, because it is absolutely chock-a-block in the area surrounding Portsmouth and Southampton. It's
so you were in dry dock.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how long did that take?
Oh, not very long, I don't think. I doubt if it was a week, and then we got back to we went back over again, and then we were shuttling from the breakwater formed by the sunken ships and the blocks. That's right. Shunting from the ships anchored off to take, to plonk stuff on the beach and for the build up, and we were there for weeks like that, with an occasional run back to Southampton.
So which, you were living full time on this.
Yeah, campaign. Yeah, on basic rations and one thing and another, and we sometimes went ashore when we dried out, you know, and I always remember our coxswain, Tinman. You remember, he was a real skate scouse, Liverpudlian, and he came staggering back on board with a blooming great weather vane, a gilded cockerel. Tremendous thing it was. He staggered back with it, and he wanted us to. We didn't want it. And he was very put out when we said we didn't want it.
So where did he lifted that from? Somewhere in France?
Oh yeah, he climbed up onto the roof of some of a house and took it up. It must have been quite a hazardous thing to do, and here we are.
Oh, he's trained in Liverpool, wasn't he?
Eh?
He's trained in Liverpool.
Yeah.
So that sounds as though it was quite a sort of long ordeal, really, this
time. It was, really. Yeah. And we were on limited rations as well. And then we hit a submerged wreck when we were shunting about, and we had the beach rapidly. And they patched us up, and we were anchored off away from the Mulberry a bit, quite on our own. And there we were, you know, we couldn't see a ship anywhere. And we were there, I suppose, for a week. Anyway, we were you know, we were going off our rockers there, and then eventually.
Do you think they'd forgotten you?
Yeah, yeah, we did. Yeah, and anyway, we were towed back to Southampton actually, and went into the big graving dock. Where the Queen's used to be, you know, 109 berth, and at Southampton, and we were, you know, repaired there, and then we went back across to France again.
Yeah. And, so, had you been bringing any injured off the beaches, or was it all stuff going
no,
on?
No, not really. No, we were more or less taking stuff in rather than bringing stuff back.
How were the beaches organised? How quickly did they get Oh,
very well organised. There was a beach master who was a real bully. You know, he used to bellow at you for breathing almost, you know, and he had a dog with him, a big black retriever, you know, and a lovely dog, I suppose. He used to march up and down the beach, bellowing at people, telling them to get out of the way. And the whole essence of it was to keep the beach clear for incoming traffic. And he was quite ruthless. He used to get bulldozer to pull you out of the way, you know, or anything that got bogged down there. And,
so, could you hear much of a battle going on every time you went?
Not then, no, no. It was all moved inland. Yeah, I think had we been, had we not been hauled in our fuel tanks, we would have been more involved because the flotilla just scattered in all directions. We no longer worked as a flotilla. We just came under whatever was needed, you know, for the immediate needs of the troops ashore.
So did you take any injured back to the UK? Or?
Don't remember taking injured back because we really weren't. All we have is open tank deck, you see. So really, I mean, I think the injured would have been. One or two things I remember. We had a deck cargo of German prisoners of war, and they far outnumbered our crew. I mean, there was only 12 of us, you know, and we had, I think, two rifles and a pistol. And the Orlikans, port and starboard, wouldn't depress onto the tank deck anyway, but they were quite placid and docile and.
What was their attitude? Were they?
Well, I don't know. They didn't seem, you know, they were just curious, really, you know. Of course, we got non-return valves along the tank deck, and when you a flat bottom vessel, you imagine when you smack down like that, you get a whale spurt, and if you weren't wary, you it drenched you. That caused a bit of fun because it was so crowded and they couldn't keep away from them, you know.
Yeah, right. And you unloaded them at Portsmouth to do with
Southampton, actually. Yeah, yeah. We nearly always went to Southampton once the assault was established. You know, the beaches were established. Presumably because the facilities at Pompey were. You know, overloaded, yeah.
Dennis Till, end of reel 3. Dennis Till, reel 4. So, this sort of went on for, what, weeks for you?
Or oh, yes, yeah, months, a month. Months? Yeah, a couple of months, I would think, yeah. Until they'd everybody moved ashore, you know, inland, and we've got. Another thing I remember in particular was we had a signal to slip and secure alongside the Rodney. She was off anchored off bombarding, you see, with her 16-inch guns, and there must have been a threat from a midget submarine or whatever, you know, so they had landing craft three thick all around the Rodney there's a tale there. Rodney was decommissioned when I was first joined the Navy, and I was in the R&B, and we got fed up the back teeth by hearing ex-Rodneyites saying, well, when I was on the Rodney, we did this, that and the other, and I never was on the Rodney, but I did go on the Rodney that night to get fresh provisions. So I could truthfully say I'd been on the Rodney when I was on the Rodney. But we used to tease them unmercifully. There's a saying in the Navy, never talk about your last ship, you know, and but they mustn't have heard, they couldn't have heard it. And
so they were having your LCTs